thank you all so much for doing that guided reflection and evolving into meditation. I hope it was fruitful for you. So I want to continue, as I said, my examination of the various protocols for post-meditation investigation. And as some of you who have been here know, I've been doing this for about the last four or five talks. I'm really into protocols. And so this is my second talk on RAIN. And I want to go over some of the concepts that we covered in the last month in my talk, and then get into the additions that Michelle McDonald has added to the protocol. She calls it drops, RAIN drops. So we will take a look at that and see if that's helpful to you as you think about this process of exploring our own mind that we're all involved in. So first of all, as you all are probably aware of by now, I like to start all of my classes with a quote of the day. And this one comes from Rodney Smith in his book, Stepping Out of Deception, which we just finished up our study group with Peter talking about this book. And I'm kind of devoting myself to it very slowly for the rest, certainly for the rest of this year and into next year too. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. He says, if our destination is to understand what the mind is and who we are within it, then we will want to observe the nature of thought, what it is, and how it drives us. So it is my contention that this process of RAIN is one tool that we may pick up that may be helpful in that process of observing thought, what it is, and how it drives us more specifically. So as I said last month, Michelle McDonald was the first person that I knew of anyway to introduce, and I think she's given credit for this, to introduce this mindfulness practice. And it was someplace in the early 2000s, but it's since been adapted by many, 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 many mindfulness teachers in the West. And it really is, I think, a valuable tool at any time in our Vipassana practice or our Vipassana trajectory. It simply is a method of investigation that we look at when difficult emotions arise, and then we see how this practice can be very powerful ally to helping you in healthy, insight-oriented relationship with whatever is present. Healthy, insight-oriented relationship with whatever is present. Oh my gosh, I could just repeat that sentence to myself over and over and feel like I'd done a good talk for tonight. I just find that riveting, evocative, and a calling to me, really. So let me remind you, I hope this is not too repetitious for those of you that are very familiar with RAIN. I know there are two other people in the room who are very familiar, April and Susan, and I'm going to call on them a little bit later to help me out in talking about this. But as you know or may not know if you didn't listen to my last talk, RAIN is an acronym that stands for Recognition, Acceptance or Allowance, Allow or Accept, Investigate. And some people I've seen the word interest, get interested and curious about your internal life. But I think most teachers use the word that Michelle McDonald did, which is investigate. And then the N stands for non-identification. So as I said, I'm going to very quickly go over, since I've done this before, I don't want to be too repetitious, but I actually think you can't repeat this stuff too much. Every time I read about it or think about it. Oh, by the way, before I get into this, I did want to say to you, when I thanked you for your meditation, that the guided meditation that I just used with you was is in the book by Tara Brach called True Refuge. And as I think I said last time too, when I did my talk on RAIN, Tara is probably the person that's most popularized the RAIN technique, and she has a little bit of a different twist on it. But if you're interested in reading more about RAIN and finding more guided meditations on it, you can find it in that book, True Refuge. I'm calling myself the book lady these days. So recognition is the first. And this is really the first step in our work with difficult emotions, is to recognize what is actually present here. I mean, that sounds so self-evident, but it's certainly not. As any of you know, if you've gotten mad or flown off the mouth with, you know, some retort to somebody, or gotten into a difficult situation, you know, sometimes we speak imprudently when we are actually not aware of what the difficult emotion is that is present within us. So we pause in this stage of the process, of the protocol, and ask, what am I experiencing right now in my body, in my thoughts, in my emotions, in this situation? Again, it sounds so self-evident and relatively easy, but it's simply not that easy to do by yourself without some kind of training or working with a teacher, working with a group. Recognizing prevents denial and avoidance, because you're bringing what is unpleasant and perhaps unwholesome into your field of awareness so that it can be seen and dealt with. So this is just sort of a given, really, in many different arenas, that you have to recognize a problem before you can begin to solve it. It's also said, and I don't have any data on this, Peter may be able to comment later on this more than I could, but it has been said in several of the books and articles that I've read on RAIN that brain imaging studies have actually demonstrated that when we recognize and label emotions, there actually is a reduction of activity in the emotionally reactive regions of the brain. So I would be very interested in learning more about that, but that's an interesting corollary for us here. So that's recognition. Acceptance, the A is for accept or acknowledge or allow. And I just want to say quickly that we have to acknowledge what is present. That's essentially what acceptance is, and allow it to be already here and already what it is. Again, some of these things seem so self-evident. You go, well, of course I do that all the time when I'm thinking about my thinking or when I'm trying to analyze my responses. But actually, we're pretty poor at doing this, a lot of us are anyway, of acknowledging what is present. So sometimes you're actually in a conversation when you're not aware that your feelings are hurt, and you respond inappropriately to the person you're dealing with, or you're not aware that you're actually, there's underneath the conversation that's going on, there's a actual anger that's happening there. Yes, Steve, thank you, has given the Hawaii Vipassana Center has delineated this very, very clearly. So it's important to note that just because you accept something or acknowledge it, that doesn't mean that its presence is okay, or that you agree with it, or that you support it, or that you condone it in any way. You're simply acknowledging that what is present right now. It's also important to be aware that any thoughts or emotions such as resistance or aversion that may arise when you recognize what you're experiencing. So again, you need to notice if the thought or the emotion you're having is coupled with resistance on your part. Is there sadness here, and am I resisting that? A subtlety, that's a subtlety of the process of acceptance, but very important one. I think I've said this in a talk before. I know I've said it in conversation with Peter, but I want to just tell you a story from my Goenka retreat that really relates to this concept of acceptance. And after several sessions, not several, maybe two sessions that I'd had with my teacher, whose name was Leslie Rains, in that retreat, and I was talking with her about a very challenging situation in my life that I was ruminating over and feeling very anxious and unhappy about, and there was a good deal of resistance on my part to the nature of the thoughts that I was having regarding this. It was a situation with a friend that was uncomfortable, and she sent me a note a few days later, and I got it during one of the breaks in between our sits, and it just was a little piece of paper on which she had written, I read this quote somewhere and thought of you, Leslie. And here's the quote: "The joy of pure detachment is discovered wherever you are not struggling against the fact of things." Wherever you are not struggling against the fact of things. And I think if you, I've been doing this because I've been kind of obsessed with Rain over the last several weeks and protocols of various sorts. And I've just been watching this, you know, trying to apply this and say, as I'm out to dinner with friends or if I'm in conversation with somebody I'm working with or whatever, to what degree am I or the person I'm speaking to actually resisting facts as they are and trying to figure out and solve the problem before they've really accepted the problem as it is. So acceptance of the problem gives us access to deeper insight, understanding, and maybe even resolution of whatever the situation is. Think about that. Acceptance is like a precursor to our getting to the point that we are open enough and spacious enough internally that we can accept or receive a reasonable and beneficial resolution to the feeling or releasing of the feeling. I'm going to come back to that a little bit later because I think that's so important and a rich observation. So in Rain, then, we are asked to notice any subtle or unconscious forms of resisting our emotions, which is such an odd statement to make, isn't it? If it's unconscious, how am I going to recognize it? Well, that's a whole other conversation that I think has to do with intention, because one of the things I've begun doing in my own writing process with post-meditation investigation is asking for awareness of my unconscious forms of resistance. This is where a good teacher comes in. This is where a good friend, a good partner, a good spiritual teacher or spiritual partner can help you, because many times somebody else can see the forms of resistance in you that you don't see in yourself. Susan and April and I have been talking about this a lot, and we're hoping to do workshops in this area, or a workshop anyway, if anybody out there is interested, in which we really dig a little bit deeper into working with each other on this process. So let me know if you're interested, because we're in creation mode these days. So we want to get at those unconscious forms of resistance and see if by noticing them, they'll go away. If you truly can allow what is here to be here and let the emotions run their course. Research shows and personal experience shows lots of times these difficult, stuck feelings or emotions just self-express naturally, just kind of leave very naturally. Another thing that is often said in the literature around RAIN is that when practicing acceptance, it may be helpful to say to yourself phrases such as, "Ah, oh, this too, this is happening. Oh wow, okay, this too." Or you might just whisper, I allow this. Sometimes it takes that little verbal recognition of it. Or you might just say, I let this be. Or as I said earlier, I'm willing to let this be. So again, as I said, it's important to know that when acceptance is present, we do have a fuller access to a range of possible solutions or possible actions, possible ways of responding. The third letter, I, stands for investigation. And after working with recognizing and accepting what is present for you, you begin then in the process to investigate your internal experience. I was reading a book by Twyla Tharp today. I've got Twyla on the mind. Tara Brach, who always brings a kind of heart-centered approach to her discussions and to her writing, says that in this process of investigation, it's really important to bring an attitude of kindness and curiosity and compassion to your investigation. I felt that it was important for me to say that, to put that into this talk, because I know for myself when I start doing self-investigation and I don't have a kind and reasonable partner that I'm doing it with, I can get down on myself. I can get very critical. Even when I recognize perpansha in my rumination, in my meditation, I will say, there, you're doing it again. I get like peeved with myself and just instead of trying. So Tara Brach is very good for that. If you have a tendency to beat up on yourself unnecessarily, I highly recommend her books. So anyway, in some people who have worked with RAIN have identified three primary facets of your internal experience that you want to pay attention to when you're investigating. And the first one, as we've talked about already in the guided meditation that I did, what I call a reflection. And we can talk a bit about the difference between a guided reflection and a guided meditation. But what we're doing essentially first and foremost as we begin the investigative process is noticing what sensations are present in the body. Always come back to the body. I always start my meditation with awareness of the body, and I try to come back to the body as often as I can. So you want to notice the sensations in the body and see if you can get real granular here with looking at their texture or the layers of sensation or maybe the changing nature of sensations in your body or anything else that may occur. I find that some days, sometimes during my life, I tend to be more attuned to my sensations in my body, and sometimes I feel like my body is just this numbed out kind of blob of mass, some kind of mass. So working with the body, being an embodied investigator is really important here. The second feature that is often advised that we address is the emotions. And in this case, you're first asked to identify what is the basic feeling tone. Is it positive, negative, or neutral with regard to this situation or with regard to this feeling that you're experiencing in your body? What is the feeling tone, which is very different thing from emotions. And then the second question might be, what emotions are aligned with or accompanied by this feeling tone? Is there fear there? Is there grief there? Is there animosity there? Is there worry there? Any emotion that might come up. Again, this requires a skill, you guys, that sometimes I feel like I'm not up to, but it's just a matter of making the intention that you're willing to look at your own mind and your own reactions and your own thoughts, your own feelings with a degree of insistence and a degree of discernment to see what is actually going on for me. So we're asked, we're told to ask the question, what does this feeling want from me? Which might seem a little woo-woo, or what is it trying to tell me? I've read several articles on RAIN in which the teachers have focused on this notion that the feeling that's arising in your body is trying to get your attention for some reason, that there's something that wants to be known that we are not clearly allowing. Because again, maybe aversion is there, maybe resistance is there. It's kind of hard to look at yourself and say, well, I was pretty pissy then, or I was irritable then, and I popped off too fast. Sometimes we don't want to admit the unpleasant aspects of our own thought processes. So anyway, I do try to do this myself. What does this feeling want from me right now? How is it leading me toward a newer or broader or deeper understanding of myself? And then the third feature that is asked to be addressed is thoughts. And this is simply noticing what thoughts are passing through your mind. Is it rumination? Is it repetition? Is it, you know, haranguing yourself, or is it retelling yourself a story? Ask yourself, what stories am I believing right now? I'm believing that my friend that I just had the argument with is wrong, that she was misguided and deluded in her response to me, and she hurt my feelings in being wrong. That's just a made-up story, but that's something that could easily happen to me. Other questions might come to your mind, and I encourage you to write them, to try to push yourself toward asking questions about the very nature of your own thoughts or about the nature of your own feelings. I do a journal entry after every meditation, so I'm in the habit of combining writing with my exploratory and investigative process. And if I can get myself well enough prepared on that, I would love to give a talk on using writing as a way to extend or deepen your meditation practice, but we'll see if I can gear up for that. So another question that has come up is, what is the worst part of this for me? So in that story of my friend who hurt my feelings, it was helpful for me to ask that question. What's really difficult about this? Am I recognizing something about myself that is unpleasant or that I don't like, and that's causing me to feel pain about it or discomfort about it? Or is this feeling distracting? Is this feeling that I'm having causing me not to be in touch with real events or real circumstances? Lots of different. Each one of us, I think, has to kind of formulate our own good questions. Another one that I like is, what is the most difficult thing I'm believing right now? When I ask myself that question about that question, about that conversation that I had with my friend, I found that I was believing that she wasn't going to be my friend. If I told her the truth about what I felt that was going on, she might not want to be my friend anymore. That That was kind of odd because I don't believe that about her. I don't believe that she, you know, she's not that kind of person. Anyway, what I'm trying to get at here is that I think the questioning process is very vital to our practice because it helps us understand how big we have to get internally. We have to get big enough to hold space for this moment, which is right now difficult. It's uncomfortable. And right now, this minute, I don't have a solution for this difficult feeling. So often I want to like fix it. Let's fix this difficult feeling right away and then get on with life. So you can see how complex and subtle and granular this process of investigation can become. The final letter then, N, stands for non-identification, and it means not believing that your emotions belong to you or that your emotions are you. So you're labeling an emotion as me or mine. I'm distressed or I'm confused. Well, that's probably not the healthiest way to interact with that emotion. It doesn't really belong to you. It's just an emotion, a thought that is present in this moment, and it's going to dissipate pretty quickly, actually. The emotions that you experience are not your emotions, really. The emotions are also not uniquely you. I think I've told this story too. I have to be careful as a teacher about repeating stories, but I remember when I was working with a therapist after I got a divorce from my second husband. I was really sad. I felt like I'd really failed here a second time. And I was crying in front of my therapist, which was mortifying, but she said, "Why are you crying?" And I said, "I'm just so sad now." And she said, "Yeah, being divorced is a sad thing to go through." I said, "No, that's not what I mean. I'm a sad person now." She said, "What do you mean you're a sad person?" I said, "Well, now I used to be a happy person, and now I'm a sad person. I never thought of myself as a sad person." And she actually burst out laughing. Now, I don't think that's a really good thing for a therapist to do, but it really did kind of jolt me. It worked in the moment because she said, "No, no, Leslie, you are not sadness. Sadness is here in this moment. You are just facing it. And it's going to change, it's going to morph, it's going to go away, it's going to soften." Whew, that was a big lesson for me, and I was a big girl. I should have been old enough to figure that out by myself, but I didn't. Okay, it can be then helpful, as we've said before, to label emotions that you are experiencing as something that is present in this moment, but not enduring. I think if you, I know there are some teachers, and I've done some reading in which that people don't like the labeling process that I've been referring to quite often in many of my talks. But if you connect that labeling with the understanding that it's not enduring, it's not permanent, then I think that exonerates us a little bit. So, for instance, and Peter has said this many times before too, instead of saying, "I am an angry person," or instead of saying, as I said to my therapist, "I am a sad person," say, "Anger is present right now," or "Sadness is present right now," or "I'm experiencing a wave of sadness right now." So I found that a very helpful method too, especially if you're the kind of person that has a tendency to kind of beat up on yourself. You're claiming that, this is what non-identification is all about. You're claiming an emotion as a label of yourself, and that's not a good thing to do. That's not an appropriate thing to do. So that's a quick review. I hope that was helpful for both those of you that are familiar with it and those of you that aren't familiar with RAIN. And what I want to go on to now is to talk about the addition that Michelle McDonald added several years after the first publishing she did of that concept of rain and talk about what she says about this new part of it. She found that many times when we're doing the rain process, that we have this aspiration, and I know I certainly do this too, to have a perfect relationship with each moment. Each moment of experience, no matter how challenging or how much it is, but each, you know, we kind of want that to be a want there to be a perfect resolution to that. But in reality, you know, we're gonna encounter some opposites when we faced rain, and that's what she did. As she was using rain, she saw that within people's experience of the protocol, many of them were experiencing difficulties with being in relationship. There was a degree of resistance. And so she says that she knew that she needed to figure out a way to help people relate to these opposing forces in the mind, because doing that is necessary, she found, for the capacity of rain to actually flourish, and for our practice to deepen within or through the practice of rain. So she began to adapt another set of words to go with rain, and the words were delusion, resistance, obliviousness, and personalization. So she found that as she was working through these issues of rain with her clients, her students, that she found these what we might call Michelle McDonald's own version of the hindrances. So delusion, resistance, obliviousness, and personalization, she found. All of these things rise up in resistance to the rain protocol. So let's talk through them here, and then I'm just going to very quickly talk about a partner protocol. If I have time, I will do that. Okay, so this was so helpful to me. I loved finding this addition to her work. So delusion means not seeing things as they are. We're in a state of delusion when we're not seeing things as they are, and then we're making comments or giving commentary or taking actions that are based on a delusional state, thinking that one thing is the problem when actually another thing is entirely what is really happening here. So, for example, we find ourselves repeatedly blaming someone in our own minds, in our ruminations, going over and over how we would berate them if they were in front of us right now. And we think they are the problem. If I could just tell my friend how wrong she was in what she was saying to me. But what McDonald says is the problem really in that case is aversion. Aversion is the principal experience of our own minds when we don't even see it clearly. So we're deluded because we're aversive to the situation as it's arising. And that's the problem, is our aversion, as much as I guess that's very linked to the delusion. So she says we need to accept delusion as an entirely legitimate defense mechanism of the heart mind. The mind does not feel it has the capacity to be with something directly or in its fullness, and so it looks away. It looks elsewhere. It finds something that feels more secure. Very interesting observation, right? That we all do this at times, and we certainly see children doing this. When we're uncomfortable, sometimes we can't, it's so uncomfortable to accept the truth of what's before us that we have to look away or defend ourselves in some way. And so if we can accept the delusion, include it in our investigation, we have done more to overcome it than years of the denial, the pushing away would do. So that's delusion, and I have seen, certainly, I'm much more adept at seeing delusion in other people than I am in seeing it in myself. And so this is, again, where I think it's just so important for us to be working with a Sangha, to be working with a good group that we can talk through these things, to be working with a teacher, a skilled teacher that can help us see things about ourselves that we're not seeing because we're deluded. The second word in drop, rain drops, that's the acronym now. So the second letter in drop is resistance. And resistance is something I feel I've been very good at recognizing this in myself. In this case, when we tell ourselves that we shouldn't be feeling the way we feel. And I do that a lot. Like, I will find myself judging somebody or being critical of somebody. And I say, oh, I shouldn't be feeling that. I should care about this person and their pain because I'm a Buddhist. You know, all of these labels that we have about the way we're supposed to be. But that, too, is a form of resistance. We're failing to be honest or to be real or to be accepting with an actual phenomenal emotional response that we're having. So we're resisting the reality of aversion that is present. But if we don't accept the resistance itself, you know, of course we're in the same predicament that we were before. We must acknowledge and feel the resistance. And if we can understand it as a defense mechanism or a faulty but valid protection of the heart, maybe we can accept the resistance. Some people even say befriend. I have a hard time befriending resistance, but that is a word that comes up in the literature a lot. And then investigate it. In recognizing it as a valid experience, we don't banish it from our heart, and we bring it into the fold of our understanding and care. The third letter in drop is O, and that stands for obliviousness. Now, this is where, and I've seen this happen many times, I probably have done this myself too. I was going to say, I know some very specific circumstances of people that I know that this is their way. And of course, it can become people's way of tuning out, spacing out, projecting, scapegoating, non-investigation. All of those are forms of mental stains that keep us from fully understand. So we're oblivious to something that we're doing. This happens, of course, we see with abusing drugs. People who are abusing drugs are often trying to avoid the very feelings that they need to address. They would rather be oblivious. They would rather be spaced out or drunk or tuned out or dumbed down than really face the feeling that's there and have the resilience to deal with the investigation process. So if we respect and even find humor in the ways that the mind avoids direct connection, we can see that it is trying to protect itself. It is moving toward the familiar, the less evocative, the more stable or the safer position to reside in. If we can bring this numbness or this lack of interest into the fold of our observation, it loses its power and has no longer an enemy, just as a confused or scared friend. I recognize this particular form of hindrance in my students when I was teaching college students, because so often I would see students when they were in a state of overwhelm with the material that they were being asked to address. If it was too much for them intellectually to grapple with and to get curious about, they would just numb out. You would see it happening in class. I would see it happening in conferences with them where they would just shrug their shoulders and sort of give up as if, I don't know. I just don't know. I'm not capable of doing this. And the numbness is part of their self-defense mechanism. And so I knew as a teacher, I had a different problem to deal with in that student than just the fact that she wasn't learning the material I wanted her to learn. So that was very helpful to me in a teaching situation. And I'm trying to apply that in my personal relationships and also in my own self, investigation. The last letter then in drop is personalization, which to me seems very close to non identification, but that's okay. We can repeat some of this stuff to our benefit. So in personalization, our sense of self or meanness or mindness, this is mine, is the place of security that our hearts seek, our minds seek. It's a very natural process, as we've talked about many, many times. In the world of constantly changing phenomena, solidifying around a me is a relentless and powerful drive. I've talked about it in my own life with you guys several times now. I did that. I talked about that with my books and how I was personalizing myself as in relation to my books that I was having to get rid of. So this solidifying around a me, and this notion of a me or a self, provides a temporary shelter, a sense of security in all the uncontrollability, is that a word? Uncontrolled aspects of the universe, not just life on this planet, but of the whole universe. Things seem out of control. But if we can recognize and accept that the heart identifies and personifies and locks in around a self. This is a process that happens over and over. Then we can recognize it as a place of safety that the mind clings to and start dealing with that clinging, disarming that clinging and that sense of safety. In this way, and I think this is the coolest part of the whole process, our deepest challenges become the doorways to our insight. I'm really having to work on that this week myself. I've had a lot of challenges. So let me conclude that section of the description of drops in raindrops with another pertinent quotation from Rodney Smith, who says, "The correct alignment of practice is to question the sense of self within every action taken." We might say every thought taken, every emotion exhibited. Correct alignment of practice is to question the sense of self within every action, thought, or feeling. So I want to be sure and save some time for questions, but I want to enlist my any comment that Susan or April may be able to help, because they both have experienced rain with partners. So here is another sort of extension that has taken place with many meditation teachers, and I think most predominantly with Tara Brach. I learned about this partnership process of rain in the mindfulness meditation teacher training program that I went through, and April went through, and Susan is currently going through it too. So I've asked them to, if they feel so inclined, to give any comments. I'm just going to real quickly go over what the if we do a workshop, we'll actually do this whole group process, so that it's something you're doing with other people, being accountable, helping you be accountable for yourself rather than doing it all by yourself. Anyway, Tara Brach, as I said, offers this practice of RAIN with partners, and she says that it can provide a safe and supportive relational space that keeps you focused and accountable to your own healing, deepens your intimacy with another person, and reveals it's not so personal. So I want that. That's what I want. I want more of that. So here's the way it works. I'm going to go through it much too quickly, but that will give April and Susan and I a little time to talk about the process of doing this protocol in group instead of doing it individually. So the first stage is that you could do it with two people, or you can do it with a group of four or five, however much time you have, really. But the first thing to do, she says, and you do this out loud to your partner. You identify a place of being stuck, just as I asked you to do at the beginning of the reflection that I guided you through. And you discuss with it, or you tell your partner the place that you're getting caught in a difficult emotion, or in several difficult emotions. So you verbalize, you articulate what the nature of the stuckness is that you're wanting to loosen up and get some more spaciousness around. Then in the A-I-N part of RAIN, that's the R part, you recognize it. Then the A, accept, the I, investigate, the N, non-identification, happens privately. So then you give yourself time, however much time you might have decided, to actually explore, am I accepting this? How can I investigate this? And am I self-identifying with this emotion? So that you just put yourself on the line here to examining that within yourself. Here are some questions this is actually a combination of questions. These are not all from Tara Brach. They're kind of a compilation of questions that I saw people who were doing this process in groups. A question that might be helpful then when you are going through this exploration on your own without talking to your partner. You might ask yourself, what is the worst part of this? What most wants my attention? We've talked about this in the reflection. What is the most difficult or painful thing I am believing? What emotions does this bring up? Where do I feel these emotions? What is the felt sense of these emotions as sensations? Positive, negative, or neutral? So those just might be questions that you had available to you as you were going quietly. I personally would want to write through this, but I've seen nowhere in the literature that that's the procedure that practitioners of this protocol are asked to do. I guess they're just sitting quietly and trying to think it through. I can't think without writing. My thinking process ends at the very end of my forefinger. So I would write about it, and that would be a good exploratory experience for me. Then after you've done that, given and timed it so that you don't just let yourself reel on out of control, after the whole RAIN process takes place, then Tara Brach says, give yourself a few moments to rest in and absorb the feelings and the insights that may have come to you. There may be a whole new set. In my experience, there's been a whole new set of feelings that rise up. There's also insight that rises up. So you want to sort of let that coalesce in your being. Just don't jump right into trying to explain yourself. Give time, give pause. The potent pause is necessary here. And then when ready, you share with your partner what you experienced or what you learned about yourself that you want to remember. Now, I know in one conversation that I had with Susan, this was, Susan, weeks ago, you may not even remember this, but mm-hmm. you were talking about a problem that you were having with RAIN mm-hmm. with the group, because you were actually assigned groups, right? I mean, you were assigned to do it. That was part of what.
It was an assignment in, it's an assignment in the course,
Yeah.
and you're supposed to find a partner. And doing that in the timeline initially given was difficult. So there's this big chat board online because there's thousands of people in this course from all over the world, doing this as a cohort together for 2 years. And trying to find someone who is in the same time zone is helpful because we already have three other things scheduled each month of meetings that last anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours. Plus, you have your life, you have meditation, you know. So, trying to find another hour and a half somewhere that everybody's going to agree on when you've already got these others was difficult. And I met with, so I'm at, our cohort that I'm in has a facilitator, and we have small groups. Our group was split into two, and our small group has myself. I'm on the East Coast. There's one other person on the East Coast in the US. There's a Canadian who's two time zones back. There's somebody in England. There is somebody in Australia. So just trying to find our small group time
Oh, gosh.
was difficult. And then we're all meeting. We meet the third Monday of the month. And we're meeting, and one of the people piped up and said, "Hey, is anybody doing the Rain Partner stuff?" And every single person in there said, either they couldn't find anybody or they found somebody, but it didn't work out. And I talked about it and somebody else talked about it, saying that finding the time that works can be frustrating. And the other frustrating part was we weren't trained in RAIN. We were giving, here's the assignment, read this, follow these steps. Luckily, I had had, I don't remember how long the course was, but Leslie did this in a course I was in with her. So I had an idea how to do it. But when you listen to what she talked about tonight, you know, I know there's some things where, you know, recognizing is fabulous. That's, you know, there's an old saying that when you recognize the problem, you've solved half of it. Right? Well, then you have to accept it. And I was hung up on accepting it because I'm like, I recognize that's a problem, but how do I accept a problem? So that accepting part played with me for a little bit. And when I was working with somebody, they were having the same issues. So we have two people who we're struggling to understand the concepts and reading everything we could about it. And there's a couple of videos you could watch. And so, you know, we're having to reach out to our group mentor to go, what exactly are we really supposed to be doing in these one-on-one sessions? I love the idea of getting to know somebody better, you know, and like with any thing, when you're meeting somebody for the first time, you're not going to lay on a heavy thing you're struggling with. But in my practice, as Leslie has given us tonight, you know, what's an issue I'm having right now? What does it make me feel like? And work through the layers of describing how you feel it in your body and what is it, how is it manifesting? And so the identification part is crucial, because then you get down to what it really is. But that took a bit, and we were gelling. We were just getting to the point. I think we had met five times or something, five or six. We were gelling finally, where it was like, okay, we know what we're doing. We figured this out. We've got it going. And then life happens. Kids got sick on the other person's side. They had to cancel. My world had some issues. I had to cancel. And then it's like, this isn't working. Okay, so now I have to go back and find somebody else at the start of the year. And what they're actually asking for at the start of the year is to find a second person, so you're doing two different ones.
Oh dear.
And I'm like, okay. So April, I see the hand up, go.
April,
I just, I know we have
your
to
experience.
finish soon, but I just wanted to quickly share that I actually am in the mindfulness mentorship training program now, which is the program that comes after MMTCP. And we have been doing RAIN as partners. And one of the awesome things about it is that you're holding space. You're like holding space for them. And we actually do walk them through all the letters. There's prompts for the whole process. And so yeah, I think the advantage to the partnership one is that when people are more comfortable with it and they've kind of internalized the process a little bit and do that with each other, you take turns. There's like a sense of holding space and sharing that kind of energy. There's support, there's accountability, and then afterwards, you can have a conversation about the experience. And it's a very embodied process, so it's definitely in the investigation stage. It's definitely about what's going on in the body. And when you're guiding the other person, you're also using prompts and cues to bring them to the body. So you're helping to facilitate that so that they don't get lost in their head, kind of analyzing the situation. Yeah, and I think what you're describing, April, is an enhanced version of what's currently in our setting, which is fabulous to hear because this is a great program. RAIN is really helps you dig into your own stuff in a way that I think helps move us in our own growth in meditation. It really helps you identify those areas you get stuck, and you may not even know what it is at first. But when you're going through the layers of what am I feeling? What is that? And you're labeling things and you're digging further. Well, is that really what it is? And you have that partner to bounce off the ideas and they can say, was it this or was it that? Was it this or was it that? That really helps clarify. And you're like, I hadn't thought of it that way. That's a good point.
That's good.
So, that's good to hear. And I didn't mean to make it sound like this wasn't a good thing to do. I really want you to hear that I like this a lot and I find it to be incredibly helpful for my own growth. But I really do think going through a training on it is key to helping you feel more comfortable with it with a partner. So.
Very good. Anything else, April, that you'd like to add to that? And then we'll see if there are some questions from the group.
Well, I definitely want people to have a chance to ask questions. I do think we could do a rain night and whoever's interested in digging in a little more, then we can do that.
I'm glad you said that because that's our goal for 2026. We have plans for 2026, and we're just thinking that that would be a great. I don't know. There's a lot to work out because, as Susan has demonstrated, it's hard. This is a hard process to do. In fact, all of these talks I've done on protocols are actually workshops. They should be workshops where we're literally trying these concepts out or these practices out. And if we could do a have a session an evening or Saturday afternoon or something like that where we just get a group of people that want to do RAIN together, we could, give more in-depth instruction to each other, especially with a group like ours, like our Sangha, which is not at all like the beginners that I work with, people who are, don't have yet a dedicated practice or a understanding of the Dharma. That's a good note. So we've got just a few minutes here, Peter, right, to open it up to any questions. If anybody wants to make a comment or maybe somebody else in the group has been a practitioner of RAIN, that would be great, or raindrops. That would be great to hear from anybody that's actually done it. I'd like to hear from anybody who would like to do it in a group. Susan?
Satish has a question.
Oh, Satish, good.
And it's more of a it is a question, yeah. And maybe it's a matter of timing, but I'm wondering if you, once you have accepted it, isn't the following process, investigation and a kind of denial of acceptance?
Peter's not saying no. Why, Peter?
Investigation is closely aligned with acceptance, but I like to use the term acknowledgement. That's what works for me.
Okay.
And so those two, what hinders the ability to accept or acknowledge something is a resistance. And this is what Leslie was talking about and also describing in the contemplation, that there's, because of ignorance, we don't recognize the craving and clinging. That's the R.
Yeah.
And when we can accept or acknowledge, okay, this is suffering, this is stress, and this tension, contraction, rigidity, that's acknowledgement. And the investigation tries to understand what Leslie was also describing. Well, what's the physical element of this? What's the emotional element of this? What's the cognitive or storytelling part of it? To see them acknowledge that that's what craving and clinging is about. And non-identification basically operates on two levels. One level is you don't identify with that particular story or feeling as being self-defining.
Yeah.
And that's what I call self-state integration. And then the other one, the ultimate one, is non-identification basically means there is no observer, there is no observed. There's identification isn't happening because the experience of nirvana. That's the ultimate non-identification, which I thought you might appreciate because your studies are Advaita.
To me, acknowledgement is a little light. Acceptance is where it is, you know? So that, and acceptance to me, and I'm not claiming that I do it this way, acceptance to me means that whatever situation is, let it be, you know, Leslie has used that term, let it be. And I'm okay with it if it's like this for the rest of my life. That's real acceptance. Otherwise, there is some resistance to it. And of course, you can. I think you can do it, the investigation, but when you're a little bit more detached from it, that's just it. That's all. Thank you.
I like acknowledgement. A lot of people, every time I've taught Rain, I've had, you know, to do some talking about that people have trouble with that. But I don't want to accept this. That's not what I want. And I think it's important to note that when we're saying, and this is why acknowledgement may be a better word, that when we're saying accept, we're meaning that you don't, you accept it, but it doesn't mean you condone it. Like, I accept the fact that I got angry at my friend for her accusations. She was accusing me of what I thought she was basically misunderstanding me and misinterpreting my words, twisting my words around. And I felt attacked.
Right.
And
acknowledgement there is because I was attached to this belief, craving and clinging was operating.
Yes.
I can acknowledge, okay, this is dukkha. This is suffering.
Absolutely.
The acceptance is the craving and clinging inevitably produces dukkha. That's what those, you know, recognition and acceptance or acknowledgement stand for,
right,
as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And
Yeah, I
sometimes.
think that's good. And also to hop back to something Satish said, it's like I actually don't think you have to go on accepting something that's unacceptable. You know, that's where that what you know, I talked about that a little bit too, but in the investigation process then you have if you can get to that point of allowing, that might be another word, acknowledging. I really like saying all three words. But then when you come to the investigation part, when I got to the investigation part with this little tiff that I had with my good friend, I realized that I wanted to be right. I had an insight about my attachment to being right. And it was a revelation to me. I thought, oh, you want to continue this little battle that's going on because you want her to admit that you are right and she was wrong. And as soon as I saw that in myself, I was able to just back away and say, okay, she is thinking things about me that I don't believe about me, but I can't do anything. And I go back and again to Peter's statement at one point, and I don't know if it was with, I think it was in a group, it might have been with me privately, but you said, I am not responsible for whoever the other person, I'm not responsible for her karma. And that's exactly what I did in this situation when I realized I was resisting her because I wanted to be right. And when I, through investigation, came to understand that I could let go of that I was clinging to that version of Leslie that is always right. And I said, so what? So what if she thinks I'm wrong?
Yeah,
Doesn't mean I don't love her anymore. Doesn't mean she doesn't love me anymore. And we went on. So anything else?
we're getting close to the end of our time here tonight.
Yeah,
No
yeah.
break. But Satish, you had something, and then we'll wrap it
I'm
up for the
just
evening.
saying that, if I was evolved enough, it's not a matter of I or her. It's a matter of that's the way universe is operating.
Yeah, that's non-identification.
Yeah, that's not
Yeah.
identification.
So, we have had a very interesting conversation tonight, and I really appreciate all the time and effort and research and practice you've applied to this, Leslie. It's our custom for us to sit together briefly in silence. So let's do that. Thank you for your practice and wish you well, and hope we're all reasonably safe and happy until the next time we have a chance to talk to one another.